You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
Last month, Cochabamba, Bolivia, hosted the World People's Conference on Climate Change and the Rights of Mother Earth. The intent was to develop a grassroots-based alternative agenda to dealing with climate change and environmental destruction, one that focuses on structural causes underlying the issues. Ben Palace is heavily involved in Indigenous and environmental issues. He is a Mohawk from Six Nations in Ontario and has worked with the Canadian Youth Climate Coalition, as well as the Indigenous Environmental Network. And he recently returned from Cochabamba, and he joins us via phone now from Toronto. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning.
I was immediately struck by the title of the conference, which includes the rights of Mother Earth. Do you think that reflects a difference in intent between the conference and mainstream summits on climate change?
The summit itself was a dramatic departure from any sort of mainstream conference we've ever seen in the past, really, that is focused on climate change. Ever since the first climate change global conference actually happened over 20 years ago in Toronto. Most of these summits, most of these conferences have been very technical, sort of expert bureaucratic-led processes. And this has really been one of the first, probably the first at a global scale, that's actually brought together a lot of grassroots movement, a lot of Indigenous peoples, a lot of really frontline communities from across the world to actually develop and discuss their own sort of analysis, understandings of where the climate crisis stems from, and discuss their own sort of strategies and opinions about, you know, how they have to go about combating it, and how other countries and other movements, other peoples around the world, have their own sort of responsibility to deal with that. And as you mentioned, one of the primary sort of functions, one of the primary things that came out of the conference was this discussion of the rights of Mother Earth, and an attempt to sort of really delineate for the first time a sort of set of rights to the planet, to Mother Earth, and try and actually, you know, deal with her as a living being, sort of imbued with these different rights, and sort of give it an actual sort of legal standing that can actually have some sort of, legal force in international law to protect the planet, to protect a lot of communities, to protect a lot of ecosystems around the planet from destructive activities.
Now, I understand there were many working groups at the conference. What was your role there?
Yeah, there was about 17 different working groups officially at the conference, plus another sort of ad hoc working group outside the conference. And upon arriving there, I was asked to be a secretary for the Indigenous Peoples Caucus. And so we heard over the period of about 3 or 4 days, a number of presentations, a number of interventions. People had basically traveled there from across Latin America, especially, and other parts of the world, and so they had a lot of things that they, you know, wanted to share and contribute to this discussion. And so our job as the sort of secretary team, and there was a number of co-chairs as well of the Indigenous Peoples Working Group, was to listen to and sort of try and categorize all of the different interventions and statements made. And in the end, what we turned it into was a sort of final declaration on behalf of the Indigenous Peoples Caucus, which was passed not just by the caucus, but then approved by the sort of General Assembly, representing all 30,000 people that were participating in the conference.
Well, that's it's a big piece of work to bite off for sure. What kind of process did that working group follow before the conference, and then once you got there?
Well, that was one of the key sort of considerations, was that the work didn't start in Cochabamba. It started actually on the internet a number of weeks before the conference. They actually opened it up for anybody around the world to actually participate in this process. And so there was a lot of submissions by a lot of groups around the world, in this case Indigenous groups, a lot of whom couldn't actually make it to the conference but still wanted to be involved and participate. And so they had all of the translations and submissions translated between Spanish and English to help facilitate that process. Basically, what they came up with was, you know, a series of sort of starting positions that they were able to present at the beginning and say, you know, this is the result of these ongoing discussions that have been had. There was a number of other preliminary meetings that were held by different communities, different organizations before the meeting as well. Latin American and Bolivian Indigenous groups separately both had their own sort of mini summits focused around climate change, and so they came very well prepared to this conference to sort of submit their own positions. And then, you know, our job was basically to try and take in, you know, all these preliminary decisions, all these results from other conferences, as well as all of the opinions of all the movements that were able to actually make it there to Cochabamba and try and integrate them into the final results.
When you think of the kind of delegates that were involved in that conference, there must be a lot of diversity to the impacts that climate change is having on their environments and culture. Did you find that a range of diversity in the proposals or in the declarations that people were taking to the conference?
Yeah, definitely. It really represented a lot of different regional and local characters for the different movements, for the different struggles, for the different kind of impacts that these communities were feeling. And I think, you know, besides the sort of normal impacts that we, you know, don't really hear about climate change, about changing weather patterns, you know, we were hearing some very specific concerns from a lot of these communities about how their rights were being impacted, oftentimes in the implementation of so-called climate change solutions. And so there were a lot of communities there who were feeling like their communities were actually being the ones who were having to make sacrifices on behalf of, you know, developed countries or other segments of their own country societies to try and, you know, basically save the planet. And so you had communities there that were coming to talk about how, for example, biofuels plantations were going into the Amazon and clearing people out and, you know, displacing them and taking away their land, you know, all in an effort, apparently, you know, supposedly, to provide cleaner fuels. Or other communities were talking about how gigantic mega dam or even wind farm projects were being implemented in their territories for which they had no control. Other ones talked about carbon offsetting and forestry projects as, you know, simply other attempts by their governments or companies in their countries to forcefully remove them from their land and take away their control over their resources. So there was a lot of actually very particular discussions about climate change, which we never really get coming out of the UN sort of negotiations, who, you know, don't really have a mandate to discuss human rights violations, who don't really have a mandate to discuss the potential negative impacts of climate change mitigation actions. And so there was, you know, very specific, I think, interventions made at this conference that I think we'll really need to take the opportunity to elevate to an international level, because these are the kind of things that aren't being heard about in other venues.
So after all of this kind of groundwork was done with people and exchange, what would you say were some of the key things that were included in the final declaration that came out of this working group?
Out of the final declaration of this working group, as a response to some of those concerns that I listed specifically, there was sort of a widespread condemnation and rejection of a lot of these so-called false solutions to climate change, including, you know, biofuels plantations or mega dams and other mega projects or carbon offsetting projects, you know, which seek to alleviate the pressure from developed countries and put it on to developing communities. There was a widespread rejection of that, as well as a call for a respect for indigenous rights, control over indigenous lands, territories, and resources in a lot of these countries as a primary mechanism to actually avoid some of the impacts of climate change, because it's a lot of these communities that are fighting off some of the, you know, some of the most egregious development projects imaginable. A lot of them in the Amazon, or even in parts of Canada, northern Alberta, a lot of these indigenous communities are fighting off some of the biggest oil and gas and mining companies in the world that are only serving to destroy a lot of the natural communities. And so as a response, they're saying, you know, just give us the ability to protect our land, and, you know, that'll be, you know, one of the best things that anybody can do to sort of stop climate change. On the second level, there was a lot of concern over recovering and protecting traditional cultures, traditional value systems, traditional governments, as a sort of secondary response to that as well. There was a declaration made to reject transnational corporations from operating on indigenous territories when they didn't have the free, prior, and informed consent over those communities. There was a call for, the world community to respect a right to water for all human beings and for all different peoples around the world. Particularly, there was a rejection of a number of the very specific ways that the UN negotiations are being conducted that exclude a lot of the voices of the most impacted communities. There was basically a whole number of these different kind of resolutions and discussions that really serve to challenge sort of the mainstream kind of understanding and framework of climate change politics and institutions.
Well, that's a tremendous amount to come out of basically just one working group, and you had 17. What were the key outcomes of the conference as a whole? Some things that you saw that we should really be looking to.
Well, I'd say some of the main outcomes were a call to the world community to sort of reject the 2-degree argument. Because, you know, right now the UN system is set up saying that we have to avoid 2 degrees of global warming, whereas a lot of these indigenous communities and other frontline communities around the world are saying that, you know, even at 1 degree of global warming, a lot of their communities could be wiped out or be impacted in ways that are sort of unmanageable and unsustainable in the long run, you know, wiping out a majority of species on our planet, potentially, if we allow for some of this runaway climate change to happen. They were calling for very specifically, instead of as is the case under current United Nations negotiations, there's a level of adaptation funding which is called for. The participants there said that, you know, this is actually really a form of debt owed to developed countries and a number of other communities around the world for the ecological crimes that have been committed. The other key point was, in addition to developing this whole framework of the rights of Mother Earth, which has a number of specific articles and principles, they also called for the creation of an international climate justice tribunal, sort of in the same idea of as an international court of justice, a sort of venue where people or the countries could actually bring to justice anybody who's committing environmental crimes or who's going against any of their environmental commitments. And so this would be a sort of way to actually legislate judicially these kind of changes and make them sort of enforceable in a way. So really, it would really actually change up the sort of system of international law around the world. I guess the only other major development coming from all of the different caucuses was the call for a worldwide referendum, and sort of saying that, you know, we need to bring this kind of discussion to, you know, the street level. We need to bring it to make sure that everybody's voices is concerned around the world, and they can all have their adequate say and input into actual climate change negotiations, which are going to impact basically the future of the world, you know, for the rest of, you know, our time on it. It's saying that, you know, we need to go out and start asking people and get them involved and interested in this matter, and be asking these kind of crucial questions, which, you know, right now are really restricted to a series of bureaucrats and politicians in a lot of countries around the world.
Now, understand, Ben, that one of the one purpose was to also develop an alternative agenda for the next round of climate talks, which will be held in Mexico later this year. How was this addressed? What came out of that?
Yeah, that was really, I guess, the sort of subtext of the whole conference. Understanding that the climate change conference that was held in Copenhagen last year was really a failure. The impetus was given for, you know, by a lot of movements around the world and by the Bolivian government and a number of other governments who participated to say, okay, we need to actually come up with a people summit, a summit that's, you know, not just restricted to the world's politicians, that's going to give a lot of impetus to the world, the movements, peoples, organizations, NGOs, all around the world to participate, come up with their own sort of analysis and strategies, and then go back into their own countries and really push for these kind of things to be advanced, to be developed. And all of this, of course, is taking place knowing that the next climate change conference will be held in Cancun, and so it'll be, you know, very important by that point to arrive and actually have pushed along a number of our countries, especially developed countries like Canada, to support a number of these initiatives, to support the widespread inclusion of civil society movements, of indigenous groups, of youth and women, as crucial roles in the negotiations around climate change, and to really sort of expand and change the way that negotiations are done.
What do you see as the next steps then going forward now that this sounds like, you know, really very different and important conference has come to a close?
Yeah, it was a really important conference, and a lot of people, you know, recognize the need to actually hold a follow-up conference after Cancun is done to you know, discuss whatever further developments happen there. But in the meantime, here in Canada, we just did a report back on this, what the summit here happened here in Toronto last night. There's a number of other people and groups that are organizing their own events to sort of publicize and have these discussions about what happened in Cochabamba. And you know, it's going to be, I think, really crucial to make these kind of things public, but not just make them sort of presentations, but make them ongoing discussions. Because I think the real purpose of the Cochabamba summit was not to, you know, have some sort of final say. It was a very, you know, short summit, only lasted 4 days. There was a number of logistical issues of getting people there and you know, finding enough time to meet. That I think we really have to recognize it as the start of a discussion and use it to sort of inform, you know, whatever kind of negotiations, whatever kind of public events, conferences, educational opportunities that are going on in all these places across Canada. And I think principally right now, the real need is to actually integrate this into a lot of the mobilizing that's being done around the G8 and G20 coming here in June, and you know, making sure that climate change and climate justice are key principles that you know, the different movements and groups that are, you know, not just coming from Canada but other parts of the world are active and mobilized on.
Well, Ben, thank you very much for joining us this morning. I felt like this has given me just a lot of information and insight into some of the things that you worked on in Cochabamba.
Thank you.
Okay, take care.
Yep, you too.
I've been speaking with Ben Paulus, who recently returned from the World People's Conference on Climate Change and the Rights of Mother Earth. He's heavily involved in Indigenous and environmental issues and was a secretary of the Indigenous Working Group at the conference.